something on the board for CS1 students?
Sure. Put it on that last board and I'll leave it up there. Okay. So we were talking about Lyapunov functions. Let me put up the Lyapunov theorem again, which is kind of where we left off, just so that we've got it, and use that to kind of remind you. So recall that we had a nonlinear dynamical system, x dot equals f of x. X is in Rn. F is some nonlinear function describing the dynamical system. And we have some initial value, x equals x0. And we would like to know, and we have an equilibrium point, xe. And we would like to know whether or not this equilibrium point is stable or not. And the theorem was, and I'll write it in a little bit of an abbreviated form, so maybe I'll just put it in quotes. And roughly it was, if there exists a V that is positive definite and a V dot that is negative semi-definite, then XE is stable in the sense of Lyapunov, meaning that if I start near, I stay near. And if we find a V positive and a V dot that's strictly negative definite, then XE is asymptotically stable, meaning that it is stable in the sense of Lyapunov, and as t approaches infinity, we approach the equilibrium point. Okay? Oops. Okay? Less than zero. Strictly less than zero. And just remember that V greater than zero, or greater than zero, means that V at zero is zero, and V at any other point is positive, and similarly for the less thans or equal tos with this in the appropriate direction. Okay, so that's what we did on Wednesday. So let's see, let me make a couple of remarks about this. The first one, which is actually something I got asked after class, which is, how do we find V? Right? So I've got a system. I'd like to know if it's stable. I gave you an example that I just kind of picked out. And I said, okay, here's the system. Here's a Lyapunov function, G. Lo and behold, it worked. But how do you find them? The answer, and this is sort of the answer pre about 2000, you guess a lot. All right? It was very frustrating. You try something, it wouldn't work. You try something else, it wouldn't work. It was very hard to find them. I'll show you some tricks for finding them in this class. But the answer, sort of post-2000, is you use something called SOS tools. And SOS stands for sum of squares. And the idea is that you search for Lyapunov functions that are sums of squares. Because they're sums of squares, they're automatically positive, right? Because it's the sum of a bunch of positive things. There are now MATLAB toolboxes to solve this problem. And so sum of squares works for polynomial systems. But it also works for systems that have switching dynamics. So if the system behaves one way in one area and another way in another, and another kind of interesting class of system. So it doesn't work for everything, but it works for a lot of things. And so this is the work of Pablo Perillo, who is a PhD student here at Caltech, and developed SOS tools as part of his thesis, the mathematics behind it, and also the software package. So in this class, so if you want to know more about this, you need to take CDS 212. All right. So we're not going to cover in this class SOS tools. It requires a level of mathematics that's certainly beyond what we've covered so far. But the takeaway is there are tools for finding Lyapunov functions. And so if you get stuck and you're working on a problem that you really need the answer to, you're out in industry and somebody says, I really want to know this is stable, then remember SOS tools and go find out how to use it. Now, it's going to turn out that for a lot of things we're going to do, we don't have to get quite that fancy. But there is something that's nice to know, which is that your search is not in vain. There is a converse theorem. And the converse theorem says essentially that if XE equals 0 is asymptotically stable, then there exists a Lyapunov function satisfying the conditions of the theorem. In particular, V positive definite, V dot strictly negative definite. So it's not the case that if it's asymptotically stable, you should be able to find something. So if you are claiming it's asymptotically stable, you should be able to prove it. The proof exists. Okay? Yeah? Right. So one of the things that asked, so the question was, how useful is this approach if you don't know that it's stable, right? So you don't know whether you're searching in vain. So the way that a tool like SOS tools works is that, in fact, it searches over increasingly complicated Lyapunov functions. And so, roughly speaking, the simpler Lyapunov functions are more robust, right, so that small perturbations won't change it. And so you could just argue that, well, I searched up until 10th order sum of squares in 12 variables and I gave up, right, as your proof, right, that it's not easily provably asymptotically stable. As you'll see after we go through the lecture, for a lot of systems, it's quite easy to tell that it's asymptotically stable, and the question is how asymptotically stable, right? And so then you can start searching for ones that give you good estimates of how stable it is. And I'll show you that in a second. Okay. A third comment about this is, and this is really what we'll do in this class, is that it's often the case that a simple Lyapunov function works, and in particular, a Lyapunov function of this form, X transpose PX, where P is an N by N matrix that satisfies two properties. One is that P is symmetric, and the other is that P is positive definite as a matrix. And did Mary define positive definite in lecture last Friday? Yes? Mary's going like this. Okay, I'll say what it is. All right, so what does P positive definite mean? The way that you would define this would be to say P is positive definite if X transpose PX is always greater than 0 for every X not equal to 0, right? Just the same as the locally positive definite we used. And the check for a symmetric matrix, so when you have that P transpose equals P, then you have that the eigenvalues of a symmetric matrix are always real and positive, if it's positive definite. So in other words, if somebody gives you a symmetric matrix and says, is this a positive definite matrix, you just calculate the eigenvalues. If the eigenvalues, they'll all be real. If they're all positive real numbers, then it's a positive definite matrix. If any one of them is not a positive real number, then it's not. If they're all negative numbers, it's a negative definite matrix. Okay? Okay, so this is a handy fact, and one that we can use to get at least first guesses at what Lyapunov functions might be. Now, this is also useful because quadratic Lyapunov functions have a special role that they play. And that has to do with exponential stability. And so I'm going to just write, I'm not going to go into this theorem in detail, but I kind of want you to know that it exists, because we talked about the fact that something stable still might have crummy performance, and I used that to introduce this notion of exponential stability and the rate of convergence and said that's a better way to define stability. So there's also a theorem that goes along with that. So if we have an equilibrium point, and I'm going to generalize it in a couple of ways, I'm going to also allow this system to depend on time. So here, my system was time invariant. Here, my system is time dependent. We'll talk later in the course about where these types of systems come up, but one of them is if you're doing a controller where you're going to track some trajectory, right? Think track a lane in the road that you're trying to follow, right? For people that are thinking about the Dartmouth Grand Challenge, then it's going to turn out that the dynamical system you're going to get is going to be time varying. So you can extend to that case. So suppose we have an equilibrium point of this system, meaning that f of xe, t equals 0 for all time. Then xe is exponentially stable if and only if, so I'll write it like that, this means if and only if, we have the following. There needs to exist an epsilon greater than 0 and a function v that can also depend on time, such that v is bounded above and below by a quadratic function. V dot evaluated along the vector field is bounded above by a quadratic function, a negative quadratic function. So in particular, this thing is less than 0 with curly less than. And that's true for some alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, alpha 4 and greater than 0 and norm of x less than epsilon, or less than or equal to, I guess. Okay, so what does this theorem say? The theorem says that if I can find a v that is bounded above and below by quadratics, whose time derivative is bounded above by a quadratic in some local neighborhood of the origin, and whose derivative with respect to x satisfies some bound, then I can prove the system's exponentially stable. And furthermore, if the equilibrium point is exponentially stable, and furthermore, if the equilibrium point is exponentially stable, such a function exists. Right? And again, you can use things like SOS tools to do that. So there are ways to prove this. The reason to bring this up is this is an example of a function that satisfies exactly this type of bound. These are the minimum and maximum eigenvalues corresponding to a quadratic Lyapunov function of this form. And so if it turns out that V dot is also quadratic, then you get exponential stability. Right? So these quadratic Lyapunov functions go along with exponential stability, and so a lot of what we'll do in this class is look for things that are, we're only going to use sort of this version of the theorem, but in fact we'll effectively be proving exponential stability for free. Okay? All right, so let me do another example of a Lyapunov function, this one a little bit, you know, less made up. And I'm going to do this example and another very detailed example to kind of give you a sense of what can go right and what can go wrong and how this works. All right, so let's do a mass spring damper system Right.
So I'm going to have a mass M. I'm going to have a spring with spring constant K. I'm going to have a damper with damping coefficient C. These guys are grounded. Right. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to prove that this system is stable. This might be the simplified version of a car suspension system. And it's presumably obvious to all of us that if I perturb this a little bit and let it shake, it'll oscillate a little bit due to the spring, but I'm pulling energy out of this due to the damping, and eventually it's going to come to a stop, right? I mean, that's what we'd all expect to happen. Eventually it's going to come to rest, and that rest configuration would be an equilibrium point, and sounds like it would probably be asymptotically stable. So that sounds easy enough. So let's prove that. So let's try and find a Lyapunov function, and when you have a function that you haven't yet proved satisfies the conditions of the theorem, we call it a Lyapunov candidate. So here's a Lyapunov candidate function. And what I'm going to choose it to be is, in fact, just the energy of the system. So let's see, I need to write down the dynamics. So mq double dot plus cq dot plus kq equals zero. Right? Those are the dynamics of this system. And so I'm going to choose V to be 1 half mq dot squared plus 1 half kq squared. And you may recognize this as the kinetic energy plus the potential energy. So this is, in fact, equal to exactly the energy. Yeah?
1 over m or 1 over...
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Right, so 1 half mv squared, right, plus 1 half kx squared. This is the potential energy stored in the spring. So this is just what I said, right? The energy must go to zero. It's a positive function. V dot must be decreasing, right? Energy has to go down because of this damping, and so this ought to be, I ought to be able to prove this is stable via that exact theorem. So let's try it out. So what do? We calculate out V dot. So V dot is just the halves cancel. We get mq dot q double dot plus 1 half k q q dot. Sorry, the 1 half goes away. Right? So the derivative of this, rect of time, pull the 2 down, k q q dot. I can substitute the m q double dot. So this is q dot times, what's m q double dot? That's minus c q dot minus k q plus k q q dot. Right, just substituting in from my dynamics. And now we see that this term here, minus kqq dot, is the same as this term here, kqq dot, with a negative sign. So these two terms cancel. And I'm left with minus cq dot squared. Right? Which is negative definite or negative semi-definite? How many people think it's negative definite? Raise your hands. Okay, how many people think it's negative semi-definite? A couple more. All right, so what does it mean to say that it's negative definite? So let's just check. Is it the case that V dot is less than zero for all states X, Q, Q dot, not equal to zero? It's not true, right? If I set Q to be something non-zero, but I set Q dot equal to zero, right, then this is still equal to zero, right? So in particular, V dot at, let's say, 5 comma 0, right? That's a state X. It's not the zero state. Is equal to zero, right? Because Q dot's my second state here, and it goes in. Everybody see that? All right. So this thing is only less than or equal to zero. All right, so what can we say? What we can say is, from this theorem, we can say that it's stable in the sense of Lyapunov. Starts close, stays close. Right? So that's just kind of disappointing, right? You would think energy would be a Lyapunov function for an oscillator. Turns out, energy is not a Lyapunov function for an oscillator. Okay? All right, so is that it? I mean, are we done? Can we do anything else? So one of the things about Lyapunov functions is, we're pretty sure this is an asymptotically stable system. And in fact, if it's asymptotically stable, there must be a Lyapunov function. I just guessed the wrong one. Energy is a bad guess. So I need to do something different than that. So let me guess another one. And I'll show you in a second how to not guess, but actually find. But for now, I'm just going to guess one. And I mean, it's sort of motivated by knowing a little bit about the dynamics of the system. So let's try a different candidate, Lyapunov function candidate. Different Lyapunov function candidate. And I'm going to try this one. I'm just going to write it a little bit differently. That's odd. Okay. Yeah, question. Stable, yes, in the sense of Lyapunov.
So it is a Lyapunov function.
Yeah, so this one is a Lyapunov function, right, so I should be careful. This is a Lyapunov function. So I called it a Lyapunov candidate. If it had turned out that V dot was sometimes positive, then it wouldn't have been a Lyapunov function. It is a Lyapunov function, but this Lyapunov function only allows us to show stable in the sense of Lyapunov, not asymptotic. So we'd like a stronger Lyapunov function. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so here's a different one. All right, so notice that this is one of these quadratic functions, right? So x is my state, qq dot. This guy is p times x. So I'm choosing it in that form. Now, here's a claim that you need to check for epsilon bigger than zero, but sufficiently small. And sufficiently small means compared to M, K, and C. This P is a positive definite matrix. Now, this one's actually pretty easy to see, right? Suppose that E epsilon was equal to zero, right? Then what would we have? And then we'd have what we had before, right? If epsilon goes to zero and you multiply that out, you're going to get exactly this. And this we already said was positive definite, right? This is positive definite. It's only equal to zero when q dot's equal to zero. So it's not too surprising that if I had something that's positive definite and I put a small perturbation in it, that it stays positive definite. And that turns out to be true. So you need to do a little work to show that, but it's true. Okay? All right, so now let's calculate out what v dot is. So let's see, let me write this out first. So v is, you can multiply this out. It's going to be 1 half mq dot squared, the cross term, well, plus this term, 1 half q, or kq squared. And the cross term turns out to be epsilon mq q dot. Okay? So that's just multiplying out that set of matrices. And so now I can calculate out v dot. So that's just 2 mq dot q double dot. Sorry, 2's cancel. Plus k q q dot plus epsilon m, and this thing's going to be q dot squared plus q q double dot. All right, that's the time derivative of that. And I can now substitute in what q double dot is. Actually, I can substitute in what m q double dot is. And similarly here, this one stays the same. And I can substitute in here what q double dot is. And I can multiply all of that out. And if you do that, multiply all of that out, you should get, so you can check this, minus c plus epsilon m q dot squared plus epsilon times minus k q squared minus c q q dot, like that. All right? So that's just algebra, which hopefully I've gotten right in my notes.
Where did you get the q double?
Which one, this one or this one?
In the next line you have dot dot dot.
Oh, sorry, this guy from my dynamics up here. All right, so Q double dot is equal to 1 over M times minus C Q dot minus KQ. Okay? Yeah, and whenever you take the time derivative of Lyapunov function, you always plug the dynamics back in. That's the trick of Lyapunov functions. Okay, so we plug that back in. And we get that. Now, how many people think this one is positive definite or negative definite or negative semi-definite? This one's hard, right? Because if epsilon is 0, we get back what we got before, right? Because this term goes away. So we know that that one's negative semi-definite. If epsilon is small, we add a small positive term here. So clearly epsilon times m needs to be smaller than minus c. But we also add on this term over here, which maybe is negative definite. So how do you check a function like this? Whenever you have a quadratic function, it's always the case that it's equal to some x transpose, some matrix, times x. All quadratic functions can be written that way. And so one way to do it is to factor it in this way. So it's going to be epsilon k 1 half epsilon c 1 half epsilon c times c minus epsilon m times q q dot. Okay, so first thing you can do is you can just multiply this out and check that you get that same formula. How do you get this matrix? Well, one way to do it is put a, b, b, c in here. Well, sorry. A11, A12, because it has to be symmetric, A22, and solve, right? Multiply it out and solve for each of the coefficients. So you can just solve for what those entries are. All right, now this thing here, there's a minus sign here, so I can ask the question, is this greater than zero? And the claim is, it is. And the proof is an exercise. All right, so it takes a little bit of work. If you can't, I would recommend trying it because it's a good way to. I mean, it's not on the homework or anything, but you know, if you're sort of going, oh, I'm not quite sure I get it, try and prove that that is positive definite and that this is positive definite. It's a good exercise in linear algebra. And if you get stuck, there's a book that we use for the robotics class, ME115, where this type of stuff comes up all the time. And so you can go look in that book, MLS 94 or something like that. So there's a book that you can look at that has exactly the proof of this. Right? Another hint is plug in some numbers. You know, M equals 1, K equals 1, C equals 1. Then what, right? Then these become really simple, right? Because now it's all just numbers. Epsilon equals 0.01. See if it works. All right. So claim it is, and I should say here, for epsilon greater than 0, epsilon sufficiently small. And again, the sufficiently small is because you don't want this term to suddenly go negative. All right. So there's a little bit of an exercise for you to do. All right. So this is, in some sense, an odd situation. Actually, people who like mechanics hate this one because you always want to think that, you know, something geometric like energy is what you need to prove everything. And here, energy isn't enough. We have to skew the energy a little bit, right? So sometimes these get called skewing terms. And then you get an actual Lyapunov function that proves asymptotic stability. Right, so now at this point, we have a V that's positive definite, we have a V dot that's negative definite because of that minus sign, and so now we can conclude that it is in fact asymptotically stable. Alright, so I want to spend a little time and talk about what's happening in this example, because it's one of the places that you see this sort of thing come up a lot with Lyapunov functions. And so let me draw a picture that kind of describes what happens. So we have, in this case, a two-dimensional dynamical system, x1 equals q, x2 equals q dot, so I can draw a phase plane diagram. And if you draw the phase plane diagram for this, then you get x2 is positive, x1 dot should be positive, right? So you get something that goes like this. All right, I haven't drawn it very well. Right, let me redraw this part. It's coming in, right? Like that, right? And all of the other spirals. This is one of these spiraling patterns. So what's going on is that if I choose this as my Lyapunov function, then I can ask, what are the level sets of that Lyapunov function? Remember that that's the way that Lyapunov functions work, is that you keep coming down in level sets. And it turns out that the level sets of this Lyapunov function are ellipses. Okay. Oriented along the axes. They're oriented along the axes because if I choose epsilon equal to zero, then I basically have a diagonal matrix here. Quadratic forms define ellipses or ellipsoids more generally, and the aspect ratio of the ellipse is determined by the relative values of K and M. Okay? But notice what happens to V dot. What happens to V dot? I haven't drawn it very well because, you know, no, I have. So here we see at this point, right, that my velocity of my trajectory is going in this way, and that's cutting in, right, to the level set. That means that V is getting smaller. The value of V is getting smaller. V dot's negative. But here, if I draw it exactly correctly, it turns out that it's pointed straight up. The tangent to the blue curve is pointed straight up. And the ellipse is aligned with that axis. And so at this exact point, I'm not actually, and so I've sort of drawn this poorly, should go like this. At this point, I'm tangent to this ellipse. I eventually go inside, turns out. But at that exact point, I'm tangent to it. And because I'm tangent to it, at this point, V dot at this point, whatever that value of x is zero. Right? Because it's not changing. I'm tangent to that level surface. And that's precisely x2 equal to zero. Right? That's exactly where this thing failed. If x2 is equal to zero, but x1 is not equal to zero, right, then this is equal to zero. So I'm not moving inside. So how do we fix that problem? We fix the problem by skewing the level sets a little bit. And so, in fact, that skewing term, I'll probably get the direction wrong. This is actually also in this book. But what we do is that we choose level sets that are skewed slightly. In fact, I did do it the wrong way, I can tell. So like this. Sorry. Oh, yeah, sorry. I did this on Wednesday. I wrote it in this way. I may not have used the term, so I apologize. V of x equals C1 is, if I ask, what are the set of all x such that V of x equals a constant, that's the level set of V, and it's the level set of V corresponding to C1. I might have another level set in here, V of x equals C2, and here, because as we come in it gets closer to zero, I know that C2 is less than C1 if the level set is inside. Did that answer the question? Pardon? Okay. So, when I draw these circles or these ellipses, they're the level sets. And what happens is that if the level sets are lined up, then I'm tangent to a level set. If I skew the level sets in this direction, so the skewing is this way, right? Then it's going to turn out that now when I cross this, right, I'm crossing inside that level set. So that's the idea in these skewing terms. So if you work in oscillators, whether they're quantum oscillators or molecular oscillators or physical oscillators like suspension systems, you will have this problem when you're looking at stability of those systems. And so it tells you that you have to be careful how you choose a Lyapunov function. All right. So I think what's useful to do is to just either convince yourself from the point of view of the linear algebra or convince yourself from the point of view of drawing some of these pictures correctly in MATLAB, right? You can draw all of these things. and say, ah, I get it. I understand it. I understand why some V's work and some other V's don't and what they have to look like, either mathematically or pictorially. Yeah?
Interesting. So for the FNF function, it is kind of a mathematical tool to show yourself that it's unstable or they have some sort of
They can have a connection to reality. I'll avoid using the word physical. Maybe I'll call it a system-level connection to reality. In the following sense, a Lyapunov function, if it's quadratic, can tell me something about the rate of convergence of the solutions. So that's something you care about, right? If I get a perturbation of my system, a wind gust blows, I'd like to know how long will it take me to recover from that. And Lyapunov functions will give you provable ways to say I recover within 10 seconds if I get a 1 mile an hour burst of wind. We'll show that type of thing a little bit later, but that's where they come in. So right now we're just learning the tool. They also allow you to prove generally, as you get more and more complicated systems, that you haven't forgotten something, right? And so I think the way I would say it is that when you're designing a system, you really, really, really want to know that it's stable. And you don't want to know it's stable because I ran 100 simulations and they all worked, right? Because if the thing you're trying to prove is stable is a Boeing 777 that's going to fly, right, 10 million times over the next 20 years, you really want to know that it wasn't just those 100 simulations that were stable, but every single possible operating condition. And this is one of the ways you prove that. So to that extent, they mean something in reality and they give you bounds on the stability and the performance. Right? But do they correspond to energy? Do they correspond for a 777 to some aerodynamic feature of whatever, or for a biological system to Gibbs free energy? No, not necessarily. Right? It's a system level property. Okay. All right. So we've got this idea of Lyapunov functions that allow us to prove stability. They are pretty much the tool that you use to prove stability for nonlinear systems. This is it. Right? That's how you do it. All right, so I want to do two things. I want to first talk about the use of Lyapunov functions for linear systems and show you some special things that happen there. And then I want to work through an example that's very similar to the one that's on your homework, so that you see how to use these on maybe a little bit more, at least plausibly more practical system. All right, so let's do Lyapunov functions for linear systems. So by a linear system, I'm going to mean a system, we did this in the first week, or second week maybe, of this form. But this is going to be zero. I'm going to ignore this. All right, so I'm going to close the loop. If you want, I'm going to set u equal to some function of x. So this is the part that I care about. So suppose I give you a system whose state space representation is linear. A is an n by n matrix. And I ask you whether or not this is stable. So, as we'll show next week, and many of you already know, if the eigenvalues of this all have negative real parts, the system's stable. So there's one way to show it. But let's suppose that we didn't happen to know that, and we said, let's look for a Lyapunov function. So let's search for a Lyapunov function for this. And I'm going to at least start by looking for Lyapunov functions that are quadratic functions with symmetric matrices that are positive definite. So positive definite symmetric matrices. And this is automatically now greater a locally positive definite function. In fact, it's a globally positive definite function because P is itself positive definite. And if I compute the derivative of this, then what I get is x transpose p x dot plus x dot transpose p x. Right? That's the time derivative. P is a constant matrix. X is our state. If I plug in the dynamics, then this becomes ax. And if I multiply this out, when I take the transpose of a product, you switch the order, like that. And now if I just factor out the common terms on the inside and outside, I get that. And we're going to call this matrix in here Q. And for a linear system, I can prove stability if Q is negative definite. So the condition that V be positive definite is the same as saying that P be positive definite, and the condition that V be negative definite is the same as saying that Q needs to be negative definite, or if you'd like, negative Q is a positive definite matrix. So for a linear system, it suffices to search for, and you can prove that this is necessary and sufficient. In other words, if a linear system is stable, there exists a P and Q satisfying this, and if I can find a P and Q satisfying this, the system is, the equilibrium point at zero is stable. And in fact, the equilibrium point is exponentially stable. Right? So this is necessary and sufficient for exponential stability. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Okay. All right. So, the extra piece that I can do is that note that if I write down A transpose P plus PA equals Q, this is actually linear in P. And what I mean by linear in P is linear in the elements of P. Why is that? Let me just do a simple 2x2 example to kind of show it. Suppose that A is A11, A12, A21, A22. And suppose I write P as P11, P12, P21, which eventually I'll need to set equal to P22, like this. And now I just write out the algebra for that. I won't write out the entire algebra, but when I write out the terms, let me just write the upper left-hand term. Here I've got a 2x2 matrix, right? Because I'm multiplying a 2x2 matrix transpose times a 2x2 matrix, right? And adding it to another 2x2 matrix. What is the entry for that 2x2 matrix? Well, A transpose is this thing transpose (2, 1) times P, right? And so the upper entry is A11 P1 plus A21 P21 plus A21 P21. Right? That's the upper corner of this multiplication. And the upper corner of this multiplication is A11 P11 plus A12 P12. So two of those, A12 P12. Right? And this Q is Q11, Q12, Q21, Q22. Right? I'm just writing the entries. So now, suppose that I were to write down this entry, this entry, this entry, and this entry, what would I get? I'd get 2A11 P11 plus A21 P21 plus A12 P12 equals Q11. And another equation, another equation, another equation corresponding all the entries. This is a linear equation in the coefficients P. Right? So it's just four linear equations. We know how to solve systems of linear equations, right? What I'm going to get is, if I write it all down, I'm going to get some 4x4 matrix times, I'll just stack up these entries, equals like that, right? The first row of which is given here by 2A11, A12, A210. Right? Do people see what how I'm doing this? All I'm doing is I'm multiplying, I'm filling in all the numbers here, I'm multiplying it out, and then I'm just writing down the differential equation that has to be satisfied by the 1-1 entry, by the 1-2 entry, by the 2-1 entry, and by the 2-2 entry. And I'm claiming that those are in fact going to be linear. And so now, this, think of this matrix as M, think of this matrix as P, I'll call it, what else can I call it? A, no, that's bad. A, B, C, D, E, F, F. Think of this as Q, right? Matrix times a vector equals this. So, what is Q? M inverse F. It's a square matrix. If it's invertible, then it will tell me what, sorry, not what Q, what is F. Right? So, how do I use that? Well, what if I choose Q to be something that is negative definite? Choose Q equals minus the identity matrix. That's negative definite, right? Because X transpose QX is just going to be equal to minus X transpose X, which is minus norm of X squared. That's certainly a negative definite function. Solve for P. Check that P is greater than 0 and that P is equal to P transpose. It will always turn out that P is equal to P transpose because if you work this through, all the transposes are the same equation. So in fact, they're redundant equations. Redundant in the sense that the equation satisfied by P12 and P21 give you the same number for P12, P12. Yeah?
Isn't the derivative of X transpose P axis? Why is X transpose P?
Say that again. Here?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So it's just the chain rule, right? So I just took the derivative of this. I took the derivative of this function, which depends on x in two places. So it's the derivative in the first place and the derivative in the second place. So I get two terms, but there shouldn't be a 2 there. Work it out for a scalar, and you'll get... If it was a scalar, you'd get 2, one from here and one from here. Right? Okay, we'll talk to me afterwards. I'm pretty sure this is right. But, I mean, I could have it... I mean, it could be you could re-manipulate it and say something different with it. But I want to write it in that way because it gives us the formula we want. Okay. All right. So, here's another one of these sort of unproven claims. We will actually be able to prove this later in the class. If XE equals 0 is asymptotically stable, you can always solve for a positive definite P satisfying these equations. So in other words, if I give you a linear system and you say, I don't know if it's exponentially stable, how do I prove it? Choose Q equal to minus I. Solve this differential equation for P. Check if P is positive definite. How do you check if P is positive definite? Look at the eigenvalues. If P is positive definite, that equilibrium point is asymptotically stable. If P is not positive definite, it's not. How do you solve this equation? In MATLAB, you use the LEAP function. Oops, P. So this is called a Lyapunov equation, because we're doing Lyapunov theory. And the Lyapunov equation is solved with the LEAP function in MATLAB. All right? So without using eigenvalues, right, here's a way to prove whether or not a linear system is stable. Next week we'll talk about how to do that same thing with eigenvalues, but using Lyapunov functions. All right, so now let's do this to do a little bit more interesting example. And this example is going to be easier for me to hand out to you than to write up on the board. And so this is from a different domain than we've been talking about, namely looking at stability of the internet. I think there's enough coming down, but just in case, I'll give you one second. Okay, so here's the setup. So I'm just going to walk you through this. I'm not going to write it up on the board because it'll take me too long. So we want to look at the following situation. In the picture that's up there, I have a bunch of sources that are computers that are going to send information to a receiver. Right? Think of this as you are all sending email to me at the same time if you want. Okay. Now, there's a router in the middle that has to take all of that information and send it to me. So you're sending data at some rate. That router takes all of that data, puts it in a queue, and then sends it out to me. If you all are sending data faster than the router can accept it, in particular, the router has an internal buffer. It gets data, puts it on the buffer, and then another right part takes the data off the buffer and sends it out to me. If you send data too fast, that buffer will overflow. If that buffer overflows, what happens is that you notice that the packet wasn't received. This is the way the internet works. And you will basically be told, slow down. All right? Don't send the data as fast. I can't keep up with it. Now, if six of you are sending it, that's sort of the picture's end. So if all of you are sending data, right? There's only one router. Suppose I'm the router, you're all sending me data. You're all sending me data, it's too fast. I say, I'm losing data. Right? What could happen is you could all slow down. Right? So now you all slow down. That's great. But now I can say, great, send me more data. Speed up. Right? So you all speed up. Right? Now you're all sending data too fast. So I say, whoa, slow down. Right? You all slow down. Right? So you could get this oscillation that starts to occur in the internet. And this actually happens. Right? So you get bursty packet loss and other things in the internet. And in fact, there was basically what's called a collapse of the internet that occurred in the 70s, where the protocols for doing exactly this didn't work. And they had to come up with new protocols. So there is a protocol called TCP Reno, which is a back-off mechanism. And what the back-off mechanism says is that as long as your information gets through, you keep increasing your packet rate. As soon as your information doesn't get through, you sharply slow down. So you slow down much more quickly than you ramp up. So rapid slowdown. And now we'd like to say, well, will that work? Right? So if you're sending me information, you're sending me information, your information gets through, yours doesn't, so you slow down. Right? But now you want to make sure that when you start to speed back up that you don't get in the way of yours, etc. Does that work? All right. So I've written here, and in the book, this is one of the examples in Chapter 2, I've written the differential equations that approximate that process. So xi is the rate at which each individual sender is sending. The equation says, look at the last term first, B is the buffer size in the router. As long as the buffer size in the router is less than its maximum, increase your rate. But if xi gets large and I start to saturate, decrease at this rate xi squared. So you have to trust me that this is a reasonable approximation, this differential equation. And the router is the second, so there are n of those for each of the sources. The dB by dt is the router dynamics, and all the router dynamics say is that I'm going to accept all of the rates, and my buffer size goes down by my buffer capacity. The rate at which I can send out information is c. So I'm sending out information at c, I'm getting it at the rate you're all sending it in, and this is just how big my buffer's growing. If my buffer overflows, then I need to slow down. Right? The sources need to slow down. Okay, so without going into the details of it, suppose somebody comes and says, prove to me that the internet is stable, right? According to this model. It's a model. The question you want to ask is it stable? All right, flip. So, first thing, right, homework one, you would draw some phase portraits. Here are the phase portraits for that system with two different sets of parameters. It looks stable for n equals 2, right, two sources. That's all, or sorry, n equals 1, right? One of the states is the source rate, the other one's the buffer size. That's all I can do in the phase plane. Suppose I want to prove it for an arbitrary number of computers. We don't know how many computers are going to be on the internet. So let's do the general case. And so you see halfway down on slide 3, the analysis for the general case. I'm actually going to do it for n equal to 3, all right, just to keep the notation simple. All right, so first thing we need to do is we need to look at what the equilibrium points are. That's right in the middle of the page. Xi star equals something, B star equals something. See it? That's just solving for x dot equals 0, xi dot equals 0, and b equals 0, right? F of xe equals 0. Remember, all of our theorems were assuming xe equals 0. We need to shift, right, to make xe equal to 0. So I showed you that on Wednesday. So we set z equal to the states x minus the equilibrium, right? So z equals x1, x2b, that's my state, minus the equilibrium values. Z equals 0 is the equilibrium point of interest. I now rewrite my dynamics in terms of z. That's the equation at the bottom of slide 3. You see it is nonlinear in z, right? You see, for example, in the first row, you see minus b star times z1 plus c times z1, so there's a z1 squared there. So this is a nonlinear system. That's the system x dot equals f of x, or z dot equals f of z. Now I'd like to prove that this is stable. So how am I going to do that? Well, we're going to use a trick. On the fourth slide, you see that I've just rewritten the equations in a slightly different form. I've separated out the linear terms in Z from the nonlinear terms in Z. So the first column vector is linear in Z, right? It's Z1, Z3, Z2, Z3, and the sum. And the second one has all the nonlinear terms. And then in the next line, the second line of that fourth slide, I've written that as a matrix times Z, like A times Z, plus all the nonlinear terms. And now I do a trick which works a lot and which will work, for example, in your homework if you choose to do it this way, which is to say, suppose that I give you a system, x dot equals ax plus g of x, where this is nonlinear. Nonlinear meaning second order and higher. Then one thing I could do is I could say, well, let's try V equals X transpose PX for my Lyapunov function. I'm leaving P unfixed so far. And let's write down what V dot is. And what V dot is going to be is that. So take the derivative like normal, plug it in, and I'm just splitting into two terms. I'm pulling the linear terms off from here, and I'm leaving the nonlinear terms here. And suppose that I call this Q, and suppose that I choose Q to be less than 0, and I find P such that A transpose P plus PA equals Q. How do I do that? The Lyap function in MATLAB. Right? I'm just solving the Lyapunov equation. What then? I claim that's a Lyapunov function for this system. Why? Well, this is automatically greater than 0 because I just solved the Lyapunov equation. And this one, this term here is going to be less than 0 because I solved a Lyapunov function. And this term here is cubic or higher. right? Why? Because this is quadratic or higher, and there's another factor of x here. What if x is very, 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 very small? Then this term is smaller than this term, because cubic terms, if x is really small, are smaller than quadratic terms. Therefore, sufficiently close to the origin, this term is negative, and it is more negative than this term. Therefore, the equilibrium point is stable. So, this idea always works if your linearization is stable. And just the last bit of the handout is what the solution for P is, setting Q equal to minus I. So that's the solution written out symbolically. So that's the Lyapunov, that's a Lyapunov function for this model of the internet. Okay? All right, so that's the idea in Lyapunov functions. You'll see them come up again and again and again. And let's, sorry, Mary's got a last thing. Okay, graded homework's on the outside. Let's get out of here so Jason can start his class. Sorry about that.
What's a Lyapunov function?
Yeah, that's right. You know what they are. It'd be really cool if you were going to like use them in this part of your class,
that'd
right?
Be
that'd be great. Three? I'm not sure I can do three.
Yeah.
That one? This one?
Yes.
Oh, I see. You've even marked it for me with X's. Very good. Which one I get to choose? Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I'll see you soon.
Yeah. Oh, and when and where?
We're going to figure that out tonight. They're testing right now. I was just up there for an hour. So we're going to exchange emails.
Okay.
Where we're at.
Okay.
We're going to make a plan.
Okay. Just tell me. I can come anytime. Afternoon's better than most of the rest of the time. Yeah. Can we just do it outside so we get off this way? You're going to use the overhead? Yeah, so I don't need to clean the boards? Okay, I'll leave it for the custodians this time. Okay. I've never seen one of these. Oh, because of a time conflict. Weird. Well, you can use the recorded versions, which I'm still recording.